I was back to farming, but a whole lot easier to run a milker than just to hand milk. And having been familiar with cows, well, it was no big deal to get up in and help her with the cattle. And Edna was a great cook, and occasionally they'd invite me to dinner up there rather than at home. So that was I thought was pretty nifty as well. And Saturdays, of course, they delivered milk. So I'd help and their daughter drove the milk truck. So her name was Margaret, and they called Muggs, and Muggs and I, and I'm not sure if there's anybody else, but Saturdays where we'd make milk deliveries.
Mm-hmm. That's really neat. So you went to Clover Park High School up until your senior year?
Through my senior year.
Mm-hmm. What did you do after school?
I went my first year of college to Central, and then back to UW, and I started out in engineering and finished up in ROTC in sociology. I majored in sociology.
With a minor in ROTC.
Air Force ROTC.
Right. So did you live in the dorms, or did you?
Dormitory living was. Most prevalent in those years.
Mm-hmm.
My first quarter at the UW, the dorms were full because the war veterans were just coming back, and so everything was full. And as a matter of fact, they had temporary housing called Vetville,
mm-hmm.
and where the veterans lived. But they had what were called co-ops.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found a place in Roth Creek, which was a co-op. And then later got interested in fraternities and ultimately joined the Acacia Fraternity,
mm-hmm.
where I stayed until I graduated.
Mm-hmm. How did you do in school? Were you a good student?
No.
Or?
If it was a 2.3, they had to have to graduate. I had a 2.3.
Just the bare minimum.
I think I graduated in girls and after our socializing.
So after college?
Straight to the Air Force.
Straight to the Air Force?
The summer of 53, I graduated, I think it was 7th of June or something like that. I got married the 1st of... Then on around the 14th or something like that of July, I had to take summer camp because the previous year I worked on Foss Tugs in the summer rather than taking summer camp because I wanted to have the money for school.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to take summer camp before I could be commissioned.
Mm-hmm.
So graduated, summer camp, commissioning, wedding, and the 10th of September I was called to the Air Force to go to flight school.
Mm-hmm.
You got your wings on the 15th of September.
A year later.
Wow.
At almost the same hour that I had my first child.
Wow, that's really neat.
Yeah.
That's funny. So we're married for
25 years.
25 years
and 4 days.
Yeah, that was down.
Do you have children with that wife?
I have two daughters. One, the oldest, is in Anchorage, married to an Air Force sergeant, and the younger one is in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her husband are both in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And as an aside, he has pictures out of his office window of the towers after they were hit.
Yes. Oh, they were awesome pictures. They were both working down in that area.
Oh, how scary
was that. Was scary. And one grandchild was at a school and some distance away. They picked her up. The other one was home with a nanny, so they were all okay. But we were kind of sweating it there for the day, and next day we found out they were all right. Yeah, it was pretty scary stuff.
So I have three granddaughters by my children.
Mm-hmm.
But Gail made up for it.
Yeah, I had four children. Now I think we have 12 grandchildren.
Very good. So do we want to go ahead and start with your childhood then?
Well. My childhood, I was raised in Chehalis. I was adopted. And I was born in 31, December 31, and immediately adopted at 6 hours or something. It was a prearranged thing. My mother, my biological mother, was like 18, and you didn't keep your babies at that point. And so anyway, I had a good childhood. My adopting mother was a rather stern person. Very ambitious, not only for herself but for me. I had to be the best. You know, bring home 4 A's and a B. Why'd you get the B? You know, that sort of thing. Used to annoy the heck out of me. But anyway, no. I grew up when I was in a sophomore in high school. I went to Annie Wright and graduated from there in 1949. Then I went down to Occidental College in Los Angeles. 4 years there. I was married between my junior and senior year, and my ex-husband went to Caltech. So he graduated a year after I did, because he had taken a year out to take some pre-graduation stuff in Maryland, where his parents lived. We lived down there in various places, Ventura, Granada Hills, until 1965. Came up here because he was offered a job with Honeywell. He'd been working with who do you work for down there? I guess he worked for Honeywell down there too, but they had another plant up here, and so he was. They kind of pirated several of the guys away. He came up here, settled in the Bellevue, Lake Sammamish area, and then finally built a home in Edmonds, where I lived until we were divorced in '74, and I had at that point 2 kids still living home. And then I went to Gig Harbor after that. Decided I was going to become a nurse, which I did, at age 48, which is kind of old. But it was a lifelong dream.
And did you have to go back to school for that?
Oh, yes. I went to Bates for that. It was a full year, every day for a year. Got an LPN. And then right after that, well, Jerry had called up one time when he was up here on leave.
Let me
begin there. Okay.
Things weren't going well. I'd been to Vietnam, then to Germany, and I was in Vietnam. My ex and I bought a house in Palm Springs where she stayed while I was in Nam. And then we retained the place. Then we got back from Germany. The family was still there. Anyway, things weren't going well with us. I was in Victorville, which is 100 miles away, so we decided that I wouldn't commute every day back and forth, but that was just too much. So I had they call it BOQ, Bachelor Officer's Quarters, room on base, and I'd leave Friday night for Palm Springs and come back up Sunday evening. But things weren't going too well with us, and it was more no fighting, just a matter of lack of interest in each other. So it just kind of withered away rather than being brambly.
Right.
same with me.
And so it finally came to the point where, yes, we are going to get divorced, but I didn't know how my folks would react to it. So I came up here, I think it was a Labor Day weekend, and I could get hops from Norton, which is in San Bernardino, which is just a little ways away, from halfway in between the Palm Springs and Victorville. So I came up here on a Friday evening and so forth, and discussed the situation with with my folks, and then said, you know, how found out how they would feel about my getting divorced and things like that. When, you know, if they had apprehension in regards to the kids and things like that, just exactly what they would feel. Well, they endorsed my thoughts and feelings. So, and in the first 5 minutes or so of the conversation.
Wow.
And that's what I thought. I thought, well, whew, well.
That was easy.
Okay.
That's all right.
Well, now let's have some fun. What have we done for a long time? Well, we haven't gone down to Long Beach and Gail's beach cabin for a long time. Let's go down to Long Beach. Where's Gail?
I had inherited a beach cabin down at Long Beach, which was from 41 on.
Mom had Gail's phone number. So I called up, and I think I want to get Mom to call, but no, I called, as I recall, and said, that chit-chat for a minute. Would it be possible to get the key for the beach house? We'd like to go down there to spend the part of Labor Day weekend. And she said, sure, yeah, but you're going to have to take me along. Mm-hmm. Kathy and I.
I had not seen him since he was an usher at my wedding in 1952.
Wow.
And this was 1977.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, not by yourself, you got to take me along. So we arranged that out where the Stilton Road meets I-5, where there used to be a school out there.
Mm-hmm.
Says, okay, we'll meet you in the parking lot and go down together. And we set a time, which we did. And I had one of the most awesome experiences in my life. Because we parked side by side, more or less, and she chatted for a minute, and Kathy, her youngest daughter, rode down with the folks,
mm-hmm.
and I rode down with Gail, and I shut my eyes as we were talking, and it was just as if we were 16 again.
Wow.
The voice intonation and the phrasing and everything stirred up a whole lot of emotions right there.
That's really neat.
And so from there, Gail's an inveterate letter writer, and I knew I'd have to write a bread and butter letter.
And so you hated to write letters.
Yeah, not a very good correspondent.
Well, you were. But, you became one.
Anyway, I got back to Victorville, and nothing ever transpired. Just we were good friends,
mm-hmm.
and we chatted.
Well, I had no idea he was having marriage problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been divorced, 4 or 5 years?
Anyway, I wrote a letter saying thank you for the beach house and had a good time and things like that. Wasn't it fun? And she wrote back, and I answered. And then she wrote back, and she wrote back, and I wrote, and she wrote, and I wrote. And
we still have those letters in a box somewhere.
Yeah, they're in the box up. I know pretty well where they are. Anyway, I was working the command post at Victorville, and you can make what was called out-of-on calls, which is a military telephone network, for long distance. So I could call from Victorville up to McCord, and then they would patch through to a local telephone call.
Mm-hmm.
So every Tuesday evening,
I had to come over the bridge from Gig Harbor because that wasn't local at Gig Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to a phone booth at a 7-Eleven.
Well, you went to Chris.
First of all, it was the phone booth, and then Chris, my youngest son, got an apartment quite close. He worked the Denny's there right on. So he finally gave me a key to his apartment, so every Tuesday night I could get my phone call. But it was kind of weird when I was catching a phone call from the phone booth, you know. I'm sure the 7-Eleven man thought I was dealing drugs or something. No, it was every Tuesday night.
But it got more and more frequent and got closer and closer together, and We finally had a rendezvous on the 27th of December.
Mm-hmm.
She flew down. I met her in Ontario,
mm-hmm.
and we had a lovely weekend.
It was straight up from there.
Yep.
It was really neat.
Especially after not seeing each other for all those years.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Wow, that's really neat. So you were in Vietnam in
1970.
What was that like?
Totally different. It was nice in that you were finally getting to employ the training that you had learned.
Mm-hmm.
And freedom from military inspections of not the person or your house, but how you did things, because you were doing the real thing, not the pretend things and the mock-up things.
Mm-hmm.
And It was fortunate for me in a way because that was more or less the year of cutting back on bombing. We didn't have many missions north of the DMZ.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw Hanoi, thank God. So, but I did see the little sparklers coming from down below that were people angry with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a lot of time in Laos, some in Cambodia,
mm-hmm.
all by air,
mm-hmm.
some by day, some by night.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever nasty stuff we hung on while we dropped or shot.
He picked up a distinguished flying cross.
So how long were you over there?
It was a year tour.
A year.
Most non-tours were a year.
Mm-hmm.
I think initially, much before I got there, well, it was 100 missions north, and but that was lasting too quick sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So they made it a basic extended year tour.
Wow.
At least for the pilots.
I forgot to ask you, Gail, what was your first husband doing?
He was a mechanical engineer. Mm-hmm. And he first worked for Shell, and then he worked for Honeywell.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, eventually, after he got up here and after we were divorced, he went to Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's retired now, remarried, living in Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
Married a heck of a nice gal. We get along just fine.
Good. Excellent. Let's see. When did you guys make it back to the island then? And
well, we were
20 years ago.
Yeah, 20 years ago this month, in 4 days.
Yeah,
we were married in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole new
that's a whole new story, which you don't have time for on your tape. And a real interesting one, too. But then we were sent to Mountain Home, Idaho, for 18 months, and Jerry retired out of there. And we always knew we were coming back to the island.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, let me just interject here. At some point, I think it was to give an anchor for me or something like that. My father deeded this property to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was ours to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
So that, of course, this brought me here, but I don't think he could have changed it had he not. But having been all around, my ex says, I'd be damned if I live in Washington, too rainy. Okay, have it your way. But at the time I retired, I had a serious discussion of, okay, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
We have this time, and it's the decision time. Do I look for employment in town, and we rent or buy in town, and get a job and get a decent additional retirement to pay for the place? Or do we take me, because I had a 2 years of college yet for my youngest daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And decided that, okay, we'll go to a little place and we'll hole up there and do what we can with the funds that we have and proceed as best we can,
mm-hmm.
which we have done.
So we moved in here in April of 84. Yeah, the house was completed then. That we started it year before.
Isn't that the same year that...
It's the same year that the home place burned, yes.
Yeah. We moved in April and it burned in December.
Mm-hmm. It was December 19th, either 17th or 19th, because we were going to have our traditional Christmas party with the candles on the tree and the whole thing. And it was that day. Agnes came over very early in the morning, and I woke up and it looked like something was on fire, and flames were shooting out of the windows. It was about 4:30 in the morning, so that kind of, we canceled that party. That was pretty horrendous. Of course, Rupert lost his life in that fire. And then I don't remember how many years it was. A couple of years, the kids then built the B&B.
At least two, probably more like three or four.
Yeah.
Wow. That's must have been awful waking up to that.
It was. Well, it was a really cold night. And normally we had the window open in our bedroom, but we had closed it that night because it was so cold. And I heard what sounded like a cat mewing, and I think it was partly dreaming and partly, and Agnes was kind of whimpering.
She was screaming for help.
Well, she was screaming. She couldn't find Uncle. So that's what I heard. And that and the glow in the, these windows were warm to the touch because it was really a hot fire.
So what started the fire?
I think probably Rupert fell asleep in his chair with a cigarette.
Either that or either a chair or they had a wood stove without much of an asbestos backing. And
they kept it very warm in there, and I think, and he had to sit up to sleep because he had emphysema so badly. It may have started in the wall. It may have just gotten too hot, but it was very tinder dry.
Do sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Tinder dry house.
See, when Grandpa built the house, he came over here on a scow house, mm-hmm. and that scow also had a sawmill on it. So what he had done was cut the timbers, and that was saying they built it on 2x12s on end
mm-hmm.
and on edge. And so it was, from I don't know when, but early 1900, that the house was built and dry as a bone ever since, and then hotter and hotter. It just like worse than kindling.
I remember a stairway going up to the attic, and I think Rupert may have opened that door too, and it was just like a, you know, a funnel.
Oh, man, just air just going
yeah, going straight through it. Yeah, yeah.
And
that was a quick fire.
I think he got lost, and he was probably
confused.
Confused, and he probably dead before he hit the floor.
Yes. That's what they said. That you know, it was just almost instantaneous. Well, that was sad. But then the fire department couldn't get the hoses going because all the pipes were frozen.
Oh, my goodness.
No, that was kind of bad.
They got a fire boat over here, and then they pumped salt water up to...
But it was totally involved when we woke up.
Right.
So there was no way. Yeah, there was no way they could have saved the house. But that was and there were so many things that were lost in that fire. Old photographs and letters and things that were family history that were just gone.
Wow.
We still have some pictures. And it was kind of neat, the two of us being related by adoption, because we had some of the same relatives and some of the same pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So we did manage to preserve some of those. Yeah.
That's good.
And some of the stories that Dad told. I wish that I had put a tape recorder on him, but he got very mic shy when he did that. I wish I had done it because he had some wonderful stories about growing up on the island.
Mm-hmm.
He tells about rowing in the rowboat with an old little Victrola with a horn on it, you know. And they'd go out and wind that up and on a summer evening and float.
Johnson guy. I don't know his first name, but he had a nickname.
Oh, well.
Like Howland Johnson, but it wasn't Howland.
No, I'm thinking Magnus, but that was Gulsett.
Yeah, he and Magnus Gulsett were buddies.
Yeah.
Clarence's older brother. You know Clarence, I'm sure. Or no, of Clarence.
Old Clarence.
Old Clarence. The drunk.
Oh, Clarence was so funny. He finally wound up in the old soldier's home at Ording, but occasionally he'd slip his bonds and get out, and he always headed back to the island.
Uh-huh.
I was working over at the dock lunch one time, and I heard this voice, and I thought, my God, it's Clarence. And he was about three sheets to the wind, and he was going to come over to see his buddy Rupert. But then he remembered Rupert was not there with us anymore, so the hat was over the heart, you know. And then he said, can I get a drink somewhere around here? Well, he'd come over and he had no place to stay. I said, Clarence, how'd you know my name? I said, I know your name, Clarence. And I told him who I was, but I don't think it registered. Anyway, I said, where are you going to stay? Rupert's not there any longer. I'll stay at the old home place. The Gulf at home was a gingerbread Victorian house that burned. And quite possibly because Clarence was three sheets to the wind and didn't mind the fire or something. Anyway, and I said, but it's not there anymore. oh, well, I'll stay somewhere. And I thought, you're not going to stay with me, big guy. So anyway, I finally got free of him. He was talking to somebody else. I went down, told the freak, I said, don't let him on because he has no place to stay and it's the last boat. And I finally sent him up the hill to get some wine or some beer or something at the store.
Mm-hmm.
And he missed the boat. So. But I was in the, what was that, Ludwig's, was that the store, the grocery store? Or am I thinking one in Edmonds? The old grocery store that used to be up where the hardware store is now. I was in there one day and I heard this gal in a nurse's uniform talking about, she was working, talking to a friend, working at Orning. And I said, well, I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but you must know Clarence. And she said, oh, everybody knows Clarence. So we had a little conversation about Clarence.
Clarence
was not a relation. He was simply an islander, an island character, and a real character.
He didn't have any other family out here then? His family had gone.
He had brothers. There's a lot in Bessie's book about the Gulset.
Okay.
You can find out.
That's funny.
He was the last of them. Magnus was older.
So do you remember some of the stories that...
I remember some of them. Dad would tell stories that I would have been a part of and remember. Because Ivo was a short-tail relation.
Mm-hmm.
He married...
Ivo married my mother's sister.
Huh. Pearl.
Pearl.
And of course, they had Glenn and Gail. Interestingly enough, his middle name is Glenn, and I don't know whether they named Gail after me.
I think they did, but Glenn was not part of mine.
It was interesting, and Aunt Lena, she was my Aunt Lena, and his grandmother.
As a young kid, I never could understand that.
Took me a while.
Aunt to me.
Well, see, we have the same grandparents. My grandparents from Norway are his great grandparents.
There's
a generation shift in there.
Oh, wow.
So. We both wound up having the same wonderful oval old tin-type pictures of the, when we have them in the bedroom in here. And his folks had the same picture because it was his mother's
grandparents.
Mm-hmm. But it, my adopted mother, it was her parents. So, real interesting.
Do you want to tell any of the stories that you remember?
Oh, I don't know. In what respect? About the island or?
Anything, I guess.
Well, Monty and I used to get Monty in a lot of trouble.
Monty was a neat dog.
He was. You have seen the Payne Road or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Payne was the last name of Mrs. Hopkins' sister, Eva Payne. And at one time, Dad had cut a trail from between the lakes up over to what was called the bluff, to the sound, and that was called Payne Lane. And he'd put a couple rustic pole benches up, one about halfway and the other one at the bluff looking over. I think Payne Road or whatever. Used to be Payne Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty well brushy. Well, I'd get antsy and tired of fishing, so one day we would take a hike up Payne Lane. And I'd be missing. Hey, where are you? And Christy, at the time, as a youngster, you didn't know, but I had my BB gun, I guess, when I was 8 or 9 years old. And we had a couple, three cherry trees in the rail end and so forth, good cherries. But the birds would get in, and there'd be cedar wax wings. Just really the tear hell out of the cherry. So I'd sit in the cherry tree and shoot cedar wax wings. Now you don't even see a cedar wax wing anymore.
No, you don't. The beautiful birds, and I haven't seen one for probably 10 years around here.
I'm sorry that I did that, but you know, when you're a kid, it's already been there. It's going to always be there.
Right.
And I think I think that a bluebird or two as well.
You blinked a robin one time, my favorite bird. We were in the woods, and he had his BB gun with him always, and we were hiking through the woods. I don't know what we were looking for, but just playing around, I guess. Yeah, probably playing Pioneer or something. Anyway, he blinked a robin. Well, I had just read Secret Garden, and I was absolutely appalled, but became more appalled when he built a little bitty fire and he spitted this bird and was going to cook it. That's one of the only times in my whole life that I've ever been thoroughly angry with you. Yeah, I was just appalled. I wouldn't taste it. I didn't mind cooking the darn crabs on the beach and the horseshoe or the horse clam shells, but not a robin. No.
You have standards, right?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
One does not mess with robins.
Do you remember the succession of the boats and what?
I remember steering the Tahoma.
You steered the Tahoma.
We both did.
We both did.
At times.
the ferries, there was the first ferry that I remember was the City of Steilacoom, which played Steilacoom, McNeil, Long Branch, and so on. And what's the family in Gig Harbor that his grandson or whatever is a football player for the Seahawks?
I want to say Spadoni. That's not right.
But anyway, yeah.
He went to school with Kathy.
They had the City of Steilacoom, which was a larger ferry than one that came in later. And I don't recall the year, but it's probably around the middle 30s. That Olson came in with a ferry. It was the Pioneer, which was a seven-car ferry. And Ogerton Olson was the owner and first skipper. And he had a brother who was even more of an alcoholic, Art. And Art and Pearl had a son, Skip, who was about a year younger than I, and we were great chums. And then they had two daughters, and Nancy was one of them, and I'm not sure what the other girl's name was. Anyway. There wasn't always a regular deckhand. So Skip and I would either volunteer or be impressed, I'm not sure which, to tap the boat when they got to their side. So I recall being in the wheelhouse with Og and with Art in the Pioneer, and later in Steilacoom. We had the Tahoma. Why, Harold Hansen, you probably remember Harold Hansen or...
Billy Hansen.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, Harold was the skipper for the boat for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
And both Rupert and Ival were deckhands, more formal than previously.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as a high schooler, they'd bring the boat over, then I'd work Saturday, maybe Sunday too, as a deckhand, and I'd get 50 cents a trip or something like that. So I made a little money being deckhand for the ferries. But the slip was not on a float, but it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But was done with counterweights. Instead of the floats that had great huge cement blocks that were counterweights for the weight, and then you'd crank it up, and so allegedly it was supposed to come down of its own weight. But with so much old grease and stiff cables and things like that, you had to pry the damn thing down just as much as you had to crank it up.
I think I have a picture of me on the Tahoma with those counterweights in the background too. I'm going to have to really do some searching for you.
But and then the apron was an Armstrong crank up, much like the apron is now.
Mm-hmm.
But the main body was and so you know, when you're by a neotene, you weigh an awful lot. And so, and what was stiff, but they had a regular pole, an old skin fur pole, and they'd lever it down to get it started coming down, and then it had a brake on, you stop it, and then there was a great about 8 to 9 inch, maybe 10 inch, huge iron bar, about 2 inches thick, and had ovals about 8-9 inches open,
mm-hmm.
and about 4 inches open in the long sideways. And then you would stick your pole in there and then lever the thing down,
uh-huh.
and then you lower it, and then there was a locking beam, and this is on both sides, so a locking beam would plug up the holes, and then you let the brake down to let it rest on the locks, and then the cars could come. You never let the brake hold it. You always let it down to the bars.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if the bar is off, we'd have to crank it up a notch or two to release the string and then undo it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all long-winded.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many runs did the bear make at that
time? I think six.
Six a day.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it used to go to McNeil, and it used to go to Ketron. It was a triangle run.
And we'd take off from here. There's a 3 o'clock boat for one, and we look over at McNeil Dock, and if we didn't see anybody there, we'd skip McNeil.
Mm-hmm.
The other way, because the boat was moored over here.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd start out and go towards McNeil until we were sure there was no one there, then we'd go directly to Steilacoom. Only after they got the island, I think, did they take in Ketron.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, the Islander used to be the ferry that went across the Columbia from Megalar to Astoria.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of small world, too, because our fireboat is the old 44 that our son-in-law used to be in at Cape Disappointment. Or at Astoria.
Yeah, that's really cool. Let me think.
It was, I always enjoyed riding with Harold, because he was sober. enjoyed the nasty weather.
Uh-huh.
And it was always great fun to get out there and not see if we could, but ride through a swell that banged harder to make a bell ring. and so forth, and then it was always a challenge in fog,
mm-hmm.
to find the dock, and the way we do that is I'd be outside, and of course you have the window open, but make a quick toot with a whistle,
mm-hmm.
and then you listen for an echo,
mm-hmm.
and the echo would come more or less from the metal structure. And so we'd aim for the echo.
Wow.
And you know, of course you go at time, because you knew how long it would take you to get there, and you get almost there,
mm-hmm.
and then cut back the engine and coast.
And hope you were in the right spot.
And hope you saw it through the fog.
And then beep the whistle and listen and turn in whichever direction and maybe follow the sign of the shore. I mean, they're seeing the place here in front here. And then we'd turn to starboard and chug on over to the ferry dock.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But we missed very few ferry schedules.
Mm-hmm. What was it like when the skippers were a little inebriated?
we were young enough and either smart enough or dumb enough to handle it. Viv Gordon landed it for sure one time because for the Tahoma to put the engine in reverse, there's a wheel about so big around, metal wheel, with a handle on it,
mm-hmm.
and you crank it backwards to run the lever to go into reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he missed the handle and fell in his can. So they had to finish the crank and so forth.
Wow. The Gordons, Earl and Gene, I talked to them earlier last week,
uh-huh.
and
uh-huh.
they were talking about docking the boat and grabbing the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the captains were a little bit lost.
That's putting it nicely. And the other thing about Og is that he was a snooze chewer. So that there's a little wheelhouse you have up here. You have the binnacle for the compass. And on a little shelf on each side, well, on one side was the quart beer bottle. And the other side was a spit bucket.
Really, really nice atmosphere in the cabin.
And he'd get little slosh, little sloppy, and the women would get kind of smoothed up around them just by spray.
Wow. Imagine anybody getting away with that now.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
And of course, when the ferry dock had the angle on it, there was a corner that the people drove around. And he had a little trailer, a little camping trailer. And a little bit of a stove, I think it was a little wood stove then. I don't think they had propane at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunk. And it was a rat's nest, I'll tell you. And the waiting room is Kenny's little shed up here. That was the white building up there.
Oh, really?
That was a waiting room.
Huh. No, there were bathrooms, too, directly over the water. Yes.
And no plumbing, just the privacy.
not really that, if somebody was walking down the dock.
You knew what was happening, you just didn't see it. Exactly.
Right. Yeah,
I still remember one of the sayings on the women's bath. Well, I guess it was a unisex bathroom. Something about don't be afraid to stand on the seat because the crabs in here can jump 6 feet. And I remember reading that when I was about 6 or 7, you know, and thinking, oh, wow, okay.
And the other one, of course, was fools, names, and fools.
Places are always seen in public places.
So, how about, do you guys remember the development of the Riviera very much? Or?
I was pretty much gone.
I was too. I was not.
Yeah, that was started in 1953, and that's when I went to the Air Force.
Mm-hmm. I remember Jeff Gillette had told me that in the early 80s, though, that there was still a lot of segregation and divisions between Islanders as far as...
Yeah, there was. I think the old Islanders, the ones on the periphery of the island who had been there for years and years and years, were not happy.
Mm-hmm.
You were unhappy, and your folks were, about burning down or tearing down that beautiful log house.
Well, yeah, two things. See, the Hopkins Ranch house was a log house,
mm-hmm.
and they'd improved it. And I think it probably put, at one time, shoved two log houses together, more or less in a T form.
Mm-hmm.
And they had made it quite cozy, quite decent. And there was no sense of history there at all. And that's where Interlaken is now.
Mm-hmm. It would have made a pretty nice clubhouse or a shelter of some sort that could be used for community events or a historical society could have had it. But they just tore it down. And it wasn't all that old.
And of course, the house that we lived in was basically brand new. It was 20 years old when Riviera got here in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, any house is 20 years old. It's still brand new, right? Yeah. And just bulldoze it down.
Wow. That's too bad.
What a shame. It's dumb is what it is.
Yeah. So when you first moved out here and had your house built and everything, did you sense the tension between...
I don't think we cared one way or the other. We were so zeroed in on doing our thing here that we were, I think, glad that we did not belong to the Riviera.
Right.
And every month that passes, we are gladder.
After that I became president of homeowners and so forth. And then later, I was on the board of directors for the homeowners. And... It was interesting.
We just kind of ourselves ignored the Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
And my thrust was try to make it as much Islanders as possible instead of the Riviera Auxiliary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of that might be the way it is now, is that it's a Riviera Auxiliary.
Yep.
So what the arguments they don't have in the Riviera Club meetings, why they bring to the Island Club meetings.
Yep. Let's see. There's something else I wanted to talk about.
ask you. Oh, Jean Gordon had made mention of the fish building, and I was supposed to ask you about it.
Okay, we have somewhere a picture of the fish building.
Okay, the fish building, as I understand it, not, I think it was a restaurant of some sort in Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember exactly when it came over, but it was in the middle 30s, because I recall it being there when I go with my dad that salmon fishing. Now, Dad, the salmon hole, Thompson Cove,
mm-hmm.
was where we all fished from. And people had boats, and they pulled them up on the driftwood, turned them upside down, left their oars in, said they didn't leave fishing here.
Mm-hmm.
But they leave their oars there. And at the time, it was called the Heitman Place. And I would guess, I didn't see it, but about that time, the fish appeared,
mm-hmm.
but was not never restored. They were just kind of there, and
well, your mom said it was used kind of as a shelter.
Yeah,
and that was it.
And it, you know, we had vandals then too.
Mm-hmm.
And people come in and tear things up.
If I remember correctly, didn't your mom turn a picture in for one of the photo contests?
Yeah, they have.
Okay, well,
somewhere.
Okay. It just looked like a big, humped up
in profile,
fish,
and it was 3D,
mm-hmm.
and about the.